Chapter 2 221 Little could be seen of Taranthus from the ground, for like the Tezzanite mine workings for which it was famed, the settlement was mostly dug beneath the hard sandstone and granite rock of the hinterlands known as the Copper Plate. Only the dark red walls of the township were visible, though the stream of heavy wagons that moved along the road between the mine and Varadesh, some 140 kilometres away, betrayed its presence long before the defences came into view. A perimeter of towers stood sentry in the dustlands several kilometres from the gatehouse, and at the approach of Cor Pharaon's caravan, columns of armoured transports issued from two of these waykeeps. Powered by efficient vapour engines, one of the prized secrets that allowed the Covenant to maintain its preeminence, the millipede-like transports crawled over the sands on dozens of small tracks, spear-gun cupolas bristling from their reticulated hulls. Nairo watched them with a growing unease, their black flags marked with the burning book of the Covenant, an unwelcome reminder of the power that had placed him into slavery.
"Exarta, stand your warriors ready,"
Cor Pharaon commanded from his lectern pilaster.
"Have the caravan form up."
Armed converts lined the rails and manned the spear hurlers of the temple rig, while flags and whistles signalled to the other vehicles to close on the mobile shrine. Nairo dodged the trampling feet and careless elbows of the soldiery, their numbers boosted further by two chance encounters in the desert while the caravan had made its way to Taranthus. Nomad riders and chariots left plumes of sand in their wake as they rode alongside the shrine, calling to each other in their strange voices and shrill whistles. Land yachts and solar carts formed an outer ring, the whole caravan moving at the pace of the temple rig as it ploughed through the dunes towards the incoming soldiers of the Covenant. When the opposing groups were half a kilometre apart, two trucks broke away from the Covenant contingent, flying long green pennants of parley above the flags of their church. Cor Pharaon gestured to Axata to command the temple rig to stop, though around them the patrols continued to circle like protective silver eagles. At the masthead, a green pennant was raised in reply. The Covenant vehicles disgorged a platoon of warriors 100 metres from the temple rig. They were dressed in robes, the plain grey of acolytes, beneath bronzed armour plates. They carried tridents and spears, the bulky shape of slug-throwers fitted onto the hafts of the weapons beneath heads that gleamed in the post-noon sun. Each wore a portable sunhood that spread between two extensible poles from their backs, so that their helmed features were hidden in shade. Another disembarked, her armour a finery of gold and rubies, a bared tulwar that gleamed with power in one fist, an archaic pistol in the other. Tendrils of semi-organic exoskeleton ran along her limbs from a backpack that clung crab-like to her form. Nairo had never seen so much archaeotech in one place. Next to him, Aladas gave him a pointed look, her eyes filled with doubt. Disconcerted mutters rippled across the deck until a growl from Axata silenced the murmuring converts. The Covenant commander's voice rang out from amplifiers set into her helm, as loud as the hailers of Cor Pharaon.
"I am Gun Deacon Hal Aspor, Commandant of the Third Tower. You are forbidden from approaching closer to Taranthus. If you continue on this course, you will be attacked. Survivors will be subject to enslavement for their trespasses against the Holy Church of the Powers."
Hearing a chuckle, Nairo turned to see Lasai suppressing her laugh. He glared at her.
"As if that would matter to us," she said between stifled giggles. "Hopefully they'll string up Cor Pharaon."
"We'll burn with the converts all the same," Nairo reminded her, ending her humour.
222. Cor Pharaon watched the approach of the Gun Deacon warily, arms resting on the side of the pulpit. The millicrawlers followed behind, spear guns tracking the roving outriders of his caravan. The delegation stopped about 30 metres away, a black blot on the red sands cast by their personal sunshades. He activated the sermonizer.
"I am Cor Pharaon, seeker of the truth, herald of the powers. You have no right to claim these free lands for the Covenant. You have no moral authority to deflect me from my powers appointed vocation. The Holy Church of the Covenant extends to where its servants are. And as we are all ordained priests of the Covenant, that means these are holy lands. Your blasphemy will not gain you passage. Continue, and I will vouch you a heretic for the trespass. Vouch away, false believer!
The standoff continued for several heartbeats, the two combatant priests staring at each other across the divide. A movement below drew Corferon's attention to the deck. Lorgar emerged from the shadow of the hatchway and turned to address him.
Let me speak to them, Lorgar said. Let them hear the bearer of the word.
No,
Corferon replied.
These ingrates do not deserve to learn the truth. Thugs in robes, nothing more. There is no more despicable thing than a traitor to the powers masquerading as their guardians.
I can persuade...
No! You must learn an important lesson here, Lorgar. To proselytize is to invade. The act of conversion is one of spiritual violence that we must embrace. None come to the truth on an easy road. None willingly heed the word at first. For the soul to be pure, the flesh must endure.
Corferon switched on the address system again.
It is you who blasphemes, Haradon of Varadish. Depart these lands or suffer the wrath of the powers at my hand.
Lorgar looked to protest again, but before he could speak, Gundeacon Hal Aspoa declared her judgment.
You are charged with heresy, the most dire of trespasses,
she declared, as more of her troops issued from their serpentine transports, electrospears snarling. Her bodyguard levelled their weapons at the temple rig, while she brought up her pistol directly towards Corferon.
I shall cleanse your body, and the powers shall determine the fate of your soul.
Corferon felt Lorgar move rather than saw him. He caught the sparkle of the gun deacon's pistol, but an instant later his giant acolyte was in the way, the gleam of phased particles striking an upraised grating in his fist. In the other, he had the mace he had fashioned for the pursuit of the mutineers. Gunfire from the other guards crackled along their line, and bullets whirred over the rail, met by the crack of carbines and the snap of bowstrings. Lorgar tossed the grating discus-like into the gun deacon's squad, felling two of them, and then vaulted over the rail. 223. Crackling ammunition from the transport's spear hurlers and deafening shell bursts racked the armoured side of the shrine wagon. Cowering behind a plated stanchion, shuddering at every rattle of shrapnel, Nairo peered through a hole in the metal left by a missing bolt. As when he had fought the mutineers, Lorgar became a thing of movement and energy, a stunning reminder to Nairo that the bearer of the word was not a mortal man, but an agent of the powers. The gun acolytes were caught unprepared, not expecting their enemies to abandon the relative safety of the temple rig. It would certainly have been folly for a normal human to have done so, as bullets and blasts seared across the divide. So it was that the Covenant soldiers took a few moments to react to the giant charging into their midst. Sand churned around Lorgar as he sprinted towards the gun deacon with powerful strides. The Covenant guard leader tracked him with her pistol, but her shot went astray through the flurry of grit and dust that surrounded the charging acolyte. Lorgar met the countercharge of the gun acolytes with a roar that could have been the bellow of Cain himself at the fall of Nashesh. A sweep of his huge mace crashed the first foe into the ground, while sparking tridents glanced from his skin and scorched his robes. Another swing of the mace pulped the armoured heads of two more. Though Nairo was no expert in war, he had seen enough of Axarta and his ilk to recognize that Lorgar fought without training or thought. The gun acolytes surrounded him quickly, thrusting with their tridents, aiming for the legs of the giant to fell him. Only his shocking size, speed, and strength kept them at bay, forcing them back with each wild attack. Yet blow by blow, they were dragging down Lorgar like lich dogs, tearing at a sternback bull. Sooner or later, a more telling strike would land. Axarta must have recognized the same, for at the instant the dread thought entered Nairo's head, the commander of the converts leapt down to the sands and bellowed for his warriors to follow. Into the teeth of the Covenant fire they ploughed, spurred on by the thought of their spiritual master falling. Over their heads seared fresh volleys of fire from the spear hurlers and the archer brethren at the mastheads. The crashing salvos from the millicrawlers ceased for a moment, the gunners taken aback by this sudden offensive, unable to target the converts who sped towards their own troops. More hatches wheezed open in their flanks to disgorge fresh squads to outflank the converts, pressing into the centre of their force. Lorgar shouldered his way through the gun acolytes to confront their leader, who ditched her pistol in favour of a two-handed grip on her tulwar. The first slashing blow scythed into the haft of Lorgar's mace, almost severing the axle. The bearer of the word let the weapon drop and punched a fist into her face, mashing the visor and skull with a single blow. The gun deacon's head snapped back with spine-breaking force. Now that the concentration of fire had relented from the temple rig, Nairo timorously stood up to look over the bulwark. A third transport was heading towards them from a more distant tower, alerted to the fighting. Soon, Lorgar and the converts would be outnumbered. 224. Fingers gripping the edge of the pulpit tight, Corferon watched with growing concern as Axarta and his converts were slowly surrounded by a ring of robed Covenant thugs. The guns of the transports had turned to targeting the solar yachts and patrol wagons, forestalling any aid from the mobile elements of the caravan. The same sprawl of melee that prevented the millicrawlers from targeting Lorgar and his companions also shielded the Covenant soldiers from the weapons crews of the temple rig. Lorgar did his best, fighting now with a scavenged electro spear in each hand. But as gifted as he was with tongue and mind, as fearsome as his bulk and powers gifted speed, he was an unwieldy fighter, and the press of foes and friends hampered his broad swinging attacks. Already a dozen converts lay dead or bleeding on the sands, though twice that number of gun acolytes had paid a similar price at the hands of the converts and the bearer of the word. But it was not enough, and it would not be long before the transport dispatched from the third tower would arrive to swing the balance decidedly against Corferon's followers.
"Not like this,"
he growled to himself, before he raised his voice to address those remaining on the temple rig.
"Not like this! Brethren and sistren, the glory of the truth does not die today on some unmarked field of sand and dirt. The powers favour us still, if we are to seize the moment. All is a test, and we shall rise to each challenge. Cursed is the man or woman who stands by to let our dreams fail today. In the abyss will wander the souls of those who save themselves, rather than see the truth delivered to the unbelievers."
Incensed now, righteousness replacing unease, Corferon all but threw himself down the ladder from the pulpit. Filled with vigorous energy from the powers, inspired by the sight of the bearer of the word beset by a ring of foes, the priest searched about for a weapon. At the rail lay a wounded convert, her robes reddened with escaping blood, Fusel lying on the deck beside her. He snatched up the long rifle and held it over his head, glaring at the slaves around him.
"If you would be messengers of the truth, be ready to give your lives for it."
And with that, he dashed to the ladder and started to climb down to the sands, not caring whether any chose to follow. For victory or defeat, if the powers willed it, so it would be.